Most of Admission Straight Talk's episodes are with schools in the United States, but I have had the pleasure of interviewing several deans and admissions directors from MBA programs outside the United States. Are there any common threads among them? Well, let's find out.
Welcome to Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. Your host is Accepted's founder and world-renowned admissions guru, Linda Abraham. At Accepted, our mission is to get you to that unforgettable moment when you read your acceptance email and shout, "Yes, I'm in!" Confident you'll be attending the perfect program to help you launch the career of your dreams.
Welcome to the 572nd episode of Admission Straight Talk. Thanks for tuning in. Before I turn today's show, I have a question for you. Are you ready to apply to your dream MBA programs? Are you competitive at your target schools? Accepted's MBA admissions quiz can give you a quick reality check. Just go to accepted.com/MBA quiz. That's MBAQUIZ, just like it sounds. Complete the quiz, and you'll not only get an assessment, but tips on how to improve your qualifications. Plus, it's all free. Again, take the quiz at accepted.com/MBA quiz to obtain your complimentary assessment and those tips. If you are a regular listener, you know that during most episodes of Admission Straight Talk, I interview a guest, frequently an admissions director or dean. Usually, our guests are leaders at a U.S. graduate program. However, I have, in the last couple of years, had the privilege of interviewing several deans and directors from programs outside the United States. And today, we're going to take specific excerpts from four of those episodes and let you determine if there are some common threads and, of course, how they differ. Today's episode is a collection of their answers to admissions questions, as well as insight into their programs. And the guests on this program are Hannah Griffiths, MBA Recruitment and Admissions Director at Oxford Saïd Business School, Teresa Piero, INSEAD's Associate Global Director of Admissions and Financial Aid, Dr. Robert Solomon, Dean of Stern at NYU Abu Dhabi, the inaugural dean, I should also point out, and Sarah Vanos, HEC Paris's Executive Director of Marketing and Admissions. I've asked some questions of almost every admissions director I've spoken to, so the responses that you're going to see, again, represent a sample. In any case, let's start with Hannah Griffith of Oxford Saïd Business School. While Saïd is a fairly new and very innovative MBA program, Oxford is the oldest university in the English-speaking world, and Hannah provides the following: an overview of the Oxford Saïd MBA program, focusing on its more distinctive elements, insights into the program's admissions process, and her view of common misconceptions about Oxford Saïd. Can you give us an overview of the Oxford Saïd MBA program for those listeners who aren't that familiar with it, focusing on its more distinctive elements?
Yes, absolutely. So the Saïd Business School is a business school that is embedded within Oxford University. Our MBA program is a one-year MBA program. And given that the business school is embedded within a world-class university, that does impact the MBA experience in a number of different ways. One of those ways being that the students can expect in the one-year program a lot of academic rigor. Our program is an intensive one-year MBA. It aims to include everything that a candidate would maybe anticipate finding on a two-year program, but packed into a 12-month period. The main aim of the business school and of the MBA program is to prepare our students to be responsible business leaders and individuals who, as they move through their career in the future, are prepared to tackle world-scale problems, challenges, and to really see business as a vehicle to drive change, be that within the organizations that they work in, the sectors that they choose to work in their communities, and sometimes on a larger scale in the countries that they choose to be based in. In addition to academic rigor, I guess some other things to highlight that students could anticipate finding on the Oxford MBA: an incredibly diverse cohort. So our student body is largely international. Our current class is 94% international, with 71 different nationalities represented across the class. And diversity of thought is something that's very important to us on the Oxford MBA as well. So we have a very broad range of different sector backgrounds represented in our cohort. That also means that students can expect a diverse range of career outcomes, and also a global alumni network that will be very far reaching in terms of its depth and breadth as well.
and obviously access to the greater Oxford community network, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Which largely comes via their college membership while they're with us in Oxford. But in terms of that alumni network, absolutely, they gain the benefit of having a network that they will have via the business school. And then obviously another network that comes via the university as well.
What don't people know about Oxford Saïd that you would like them to know? Or what's a common misconception about Oxford Saïd that you'd like to correct?
That's a really great question. So I would say that the school is probably best known for its focus on social impact and its focus on entrepreneurship. So students who research the business school and research the MBA, those are probably the two main areas that will stand out to them in terms of what the school focuses on. So I would say probably a misconception as a result of that is that the MBA at Oxford isn't for you if you're a finance professional or a consulting professional or somebody who's maybe looking to move into one of those two sectors after the program. And actually, the reality in terms of the makeup of our cohort and in terms of the sectors that our students go on to work in after the MBA, those two sectors are actually quite well represented. So about 45% of our class will come from those sectors in advance of doing the MBA, and about 50% of our class will go on to work in those spaces after the program. There is large aspects of the program in terms of the curriculum itself, but also in terms of the co-curriculars that are designed to support students who are looking to move into those spaces. So obviously in terms of the core courses themselves, there's a large number of those that are finance focused. So for students who are maybe looking to pivot into that space, there is the opportunity to really study those subjects in depth on the MBA. One of our most popular co-curriculars on the Oxford MBA is our finance lab, which students, again, who are interested in either accelerating their career in finance or moving into the space, really, really benefit from. Similarly, with students who are looking to maybe pivot into consulting, I mentioned the strategic consulting project already that they can do in the summer semester. Our Career Development Centre also run a consulting development programme throughout the academic year to support students who are looking to move into that space. And certainly in terms, again, of the finance focus, we have some world-renowned finance faculty at the business school as well. So I would say that's probably the more common misconception, is that maybe if you are somebody who isn't interested or doesn't have experience of social impact or entrepreneurship, that maybe Saïd's not for you. And the case is actually quite the opposite. We do have a focus on both those areas, but we equally have a focus on finance, consulting and a number of other industries as well.
Thank you very much for that answer. That was really clear. Okay, let's move to admissions here. Okay, now Saïd asks for a transcript, test score, a one-page resume, two references, a supporting statement, and then an online assessment before it starts evaluating the application and deciding whom to interview. What happens after the applicant hits submit and uploads the online assessment, or takes the online assessment, I should say?
I'm sure there's lots of people who actually wonder this. It's a really good question. So once the applications come through to us, they are processed by members of our team. That usually can take kind of a 2 to 3 week period, depending on what stage of the application process we are at. And once they have been processed, their application will then be reviewed by the admissions committee. It will be reviewed twice by two individual members of that committee. And it will then be reviewed a final time by the more senior members of that admissions committee before a decision is made on whether or not that candidate will move through to interview. The applications at Oxford are really, really viewed holistically. So there's not a particular component of the application that holds more weight than others. When we are reviewing the applications, all of the different components are taken into account. And we're really trying to get a sense from someone's application of who they are as an individual and what they could add to the cohort if they were to be admitted. So yeah, essentially that's it. That process in terms of review usually again takes kind of between 2 to 4 weeks, depending on the stage deadline that we are at. Students will then be informed if they have been selected to move through to interview. And then that process will run usually again for about 3 to 4 weeks before students will learn if they have been successful and have been admitted to the program.
A lot of applicants think that it's all about the GPA and the test score.
Yes.
What else are you looking for?
Yeah, really good question. And definitely, I would say to anybody who has that concern, particularly in relation to GPA, which people will reference often, do not let that be a barrier to applying for an MBA. And also try not to spend too much energy worrying about it, because the GPA is the one component of the application that candidates can't influence. You know, it's the score that
can't
they have
it.
They've completed their degree. And so essentially, if they have a concern around that area, I would say the best mindset to have is how you can focus on the other components that you can still control and make sure that they're really strong so that they essentially outweigh any concerns that you might have about your GPA. I would take a similar approach with the GMAT, to be honest. So it is an important aspect of the application, but essentially what we're looking to see via your GMAT score is that you are somebody that would be able to cope with the academic rigor of the program, particularly with the quantitative element of the program. But there is a broader range of scores represented across our class than candidates would often anticipate. And students who come through with a lower GMAT score are people who demonstrate strength in other areas of the application. So that sometimes via the work experience that they've had across their career to date, there are individuals who are able to show us that they've enjoyed good career progression, and that they've maybe had good international exposure across their career to date, that they've had leadership opportunities that they've been able to embrace. The personal statement that they can write really allows them to give us a sense of their individual story. So again, we're really looking for authenticity to try to get a sense of who somebody is via the application. And then similarly through the online assessment, which I think is a really key component of the application in terms of showing the committee a little bit more of your personality. It gives us a sense of your communication style, of the experience you have that you might be able to draw on and share with your classmates if you were part of the program. And all of those things are of equal importance to us when we are deciding whether or not it's somebody who we would want to put through to interview and ultimately admit to the class.
Why do you need both the online assessment and the interview?
Yeah, really good question. And sometimes candidates do assume, I think, because we have the online assessment, that it has replaced the interview. So it's good to clarify that it definitely hasn't. So the online assessment is brief in terms of the amount of information students can provide. So it involves them video recording answers to 3 questions, but those answers are 90 seconds or 60 seconds in length. So it gives us a taste maybe of what that individual might be like, but probably doesn't give us enough of a sense of their personality and how they might be within the cohort. The interview also allows us the opportunity to just explore some of the other components of the application in a little bit more detail. So particularly the career plan is something that we will talk to candidates a lot about at interview. And also, as I said, really just trying to get a sense of who they are and of what they might add to the cohort. And similarly for candidates, I think the interview is a really important part of the process, because it's their opportunity to maybe learn a little bit more about whether they think the business school is the right place for them. And you know, we're very aware that a lot of candidates who apply to the Oxford MBA are applying to a number of other business schools as well, and so the interview process is an opportunity for them to try to get a sense of, okay, is this a business school where I would fit? Is this a program where I can really benefit in terms of my future aims and the career outcomes that I'm looking to achieve? And so the interview, I would say, is maybe more conversational sometimes than candidates would expect. And it does really give them that opportunity to make sure that the business school might be the right place for them as well.
For a different perspective, let's hear from INSEAD's Teresa Piero. Here are the topics she addresses: an overview of INSEAD's MBA program, INSEAD's language requirements, and what INSEAD is looking for in MBA applicants. Can you give us, just to start, an overview of INSEAD's MBA program for those listeners who aren't that familiar with it?
Yes, of course. Lynn, our MBA program is a 10-month program that brings together like around 100 nationalities per cohort. You can either start in January or in the August intake. It's a very intense program. It's shorter, but our participants make the most out of it. And we commonly hear all of our alumni saying that it was the best years of their lives.
That's great. Okay. Now, INSEAD has 3 full campuses and several partnerships with both U.S. programs and CEBS in China. How do most students take advantage of that geographic diversity? I mean, it's already intense, right? If it was, you know, 10 months in Fontainebleau the whole time, that would already be intense. But if, you have all this other options. How do they do it?
Indeed. So our applicants have to make a decision of which will be their home campus. So what is the core courses? They will have to stay in their home campus. After that, when the electives start, they can either change campuses. So if someone starts in Singapore, they can go to Fontainebleau and vice versa. And then we offer different partnerships, as you mentioned, with different schools in the US and China. So what happens is that they can go to that school. While they're, say, in that school, they're like a full students from the welcoming school. And they spend their period there, and then they come back to India.
So where are the three campuses again? I know it's Fontainebleau, Singapore, and
so
the third
one.
So we
have three campuses, Fontainebleau, Singapore, and Abu Dhabi. And we opened pre-COVID San Francisco Hub.
So that's not considered a full campus yet, is it?
It's a hub.
It's a hub. Okay. Okay. And where are the partnerships?
The partnerships are with Kellogg and Wharton in the US and with SIEPS in China.
Got it. And when you talk about your home campus, how much time are you required to spend there? What do most students do? Or is there a most?
Per class. So there's not like a statistically something consistent. They have to stay for the core courses. So for the first period, they have to stay where they decided to apply to.
Okay.
Because we consider that that part is like the most intense of the program, because they have like all of these classes and all the exams, and it's like the core, and they have to stay focused where they are, and then switch campuses. So it's super interesting, because now, for example, for instance, we welcomed those who started in Singapore, and they arrived to Fontainebleau, and it's like they discover like a new school. It's like a new campus, and they get to see other participants that started here in the program, and they have moved, or those who came with them. So I find it very vibrant, the campus exchange moment, because like the campus is like full of suitcases and they are coming in and out, and they see new faces, and you see how, oh, I connected with you when we were applicants, and now I see you here. And it's a good sense of community.
Very nice. Very nice. In terms of the partnership schools, is the 10 months, is it divided into semesters or you mentioned periods? How does that work?
There are periods of 2 months.
Okay. So it's divided into five periods of two months.
Plus P0, which P0 starts before they start their to camp. So we've got P0 and five periods.
Got it. Okay. Could you review the language requirements both at entry and graduation for INSEAD participants? That's a very distinctive aspect of the program.
Yes. And you know what? This is one very near to my heart. So as you know, or maybe you don't, INSEAD was founded by Georges Doriot, who was a French Harvard professor. He wanted to bring people together.
Okay.
And when he did that, the courses at the beginning, they were taught in those three languages, so German, English, and French, which were the languages in Europe.
Of course.
We've been adapting to the different times. English has to be validated either by your native language or by other means of assessment. We need to ensure that every MBA or every student at INSEAD is going to be able to follow the class and make the most out of the program. So English has to be validated. If it's your native language, we will not question it. But then you will have to validate the second language for entry reasons.
So how do you validate?
So if English isn't your native language, you have to validate it. So there are different criteria.
Yeah.
Most common are you need to have your whole degree has to be taught in English. It has to be specified in your transcripts. Or through TOEFL, PTA, or YELPS.
And if English is your native language and your second language is French, for example, or Spanish.
There are other tests, they are local, so there are like national tests that we accept many of them, but there are many different like experiences. For example, the TOEFL is only 2 years and each test has a different experience and date. So we will look at that very closely for your second language, if English is your native language. And for instance, if you, for example, have course your bachelor's in Spanish, it would be validated too. The second language is like a C1, so it's fluent that we require, and it's an admissions requirement. Now, for the third language, it's an exit language, so you need it to graduate. And we do not give the diploma if you have not validated your third language. Knowing that, the level that we require is much lower. It's an A1. When I'm talking to candidates or prospects, I always, always encourage them to get that language policy cleared before they start, because the program is very intense and they prefer to invest their time in other things than language, learning the language. But for us, it's like in our DNA. And this open-mindedness and being able to make the most of this super international exposure, we wanted to have these three languages with you.
Right. Yeah. I know there are tests that test these levels. So I'm thinking about my own abilities with second languages. Understanding comes first. Usually speaking is harder, is like a second level, and writing is the hardest.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
All right. So in lay terms, if you want to use that, would your entry level requirement be that the person have obviously speaking and comprehension and speaking ability and some writing ability or fluent writing ability, and the exit requirement, what would that be in terms of, again, just a very approximate? I realize there are stricter requirements. I'm just trying to make it a little bit easier to grasp.
No, the second language is quite strict. You have to go through the three levels, and it's a C1, which is fluent.
You have to be able to write.
You have to be able to write, yes. The exit language, which is A2, is more of a little bit of everything. So not very complicated sentences, and not that you don't have to be able to write like a proper essay, but you would be able to write an email.
Got it.
To a friend.
Okay. All right. That's very good. They're very helpful. Okay. Wonderful. Now, INSEAD clearly lists its admissions criteria, and your website says they are ability to contribute, academic capacity, international motivation, leadership potential. I'm sure you know those. You don't need me to tell them to you. Where are you most likely to see those qualities in the different elements of the INSEAD application?
So it's interesting because when I run application workshops very often. I always, my first slide is with this, four pictures of these four admissions criteria. And I always tell them, whatever.
It's great that you're so clear about it, by the way. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And on top of that, when I'm running application workshops, I show the picture and say, whatever information you share with us, be sure that it falls in one of these buckets.
Because that's great advice.
Follow-up courses. But what's more important? No. But INSEAD is holistic. And I'm always saying the same. I'm always sharing with people. At INSEAD, we're human beings behind the admissions process. There are people reading the applications, and people like, they begin this conspiracy theories like, oh, so you put in our CV in a scan and they give you like, no, there's nothing like that. It's all about holistic, and we try to see everything. So we have a lot of essays, which we are aware. We know that we ask for many essays compared to other schools, but we really want to know. And it's not only about us deciding if you're a good candidate for INSEAD or not, but if this is what you want, this is what you need to get wherever you want to go. So these four criteria, and that's why we are so clear about it, they need to be covered in your application. It's interesting because, and I think we will talk about the Kira video, but the pre-selection decision is purely based on what we've received in that application form. And we need to be this sure that those four criteria are met.
Sure. Do you typically find, I would assume that academic capacity you typically find in the transcript and the test score?
Voilà, yes.
Okay. Yes. International motivation would probably show up, in my guess, both in your resume and your activities, as well as the essays.
We are always, in international motivation is my favorite.
Okay. Yeah.
Because it's who we are. So international motivation is about us being sure that you're not only going to be comfortable with such diversity in the class, but they're going to embrace it. And that you're going to be, and you know how much you're going to learn from this diversity, and you're going to make the most out of it. So we need to be sure of this. And how do we see it? So the most common, and where most of our candidates really check those boxes, is because they've gone through international experiences before themselves, either studying, either working abroad. And we do believe that this aspect in your life, it's a big experience that makes you who you are in a way. You've gone abroad, you've gone to a different culture, you had to adapt.
Yeah.
You had to make some compromises. You learned so many things about it. And you had to melt in.
You have to adapt. And, I think it's the key thing.
So we get that from previous experiences. Also, in other cases, we have candidates that didn't have the opportunity of living abroad or having this experience. So we ask them to tell us how they've been in an international environment and how they felt about it. So either you're working in a country where there are like many people from different nationalities, either you work in a very international company and you have to collaborate and you have to interact with other nationalities from other countries. So that's what we are looking. So we do ask in the essays, what has been your experience? And we also ask a detailed list of your international experiences you've had in the past.
Right. And I think, you know, in advising clients, we sometimes talk about multicultural exposure. So as you say, some applicants, they might live in a diverse country, with many different cultures within their own country. It's not homogenous, it's a heterogeneous culture.
And nowadays, most of the countries are like that. That's why companies are always looking for people who are thriving in this kind of societies.
Right, for sure. There's more and more like that. And ability to contribute, I would assume, also will come really throughout the application, really.
Ability to contribute and leadership potential come a lot also through the essays.
Yes.
What is it? And the question is like, what is it that you bring to the class?
Right.
You want to be sure that when you raise the hand, you're going to share experiences, share what you know, ask the correct questions, and where those questions and those contributions are going to come from your past experience.
Right. Okay, great. Now, you mentioned the video a second ago. What is the role of the video interview in the evaluation process?
We are very happy with the video. We love the video. And okay. Our message to candidates is always like, be yourself. So when I'm presenting this application workshops, I put a picture of Salvador Dalí, who is one of our most well-known artists in Spain, because he was genuine. He was himself and he wasn't shy to show who he was. And it's about that. I'm always telling, we are not expecting you to be a BBC reporter unless you were a BBC reporter. So don't try to use those fancy words or things that you think that are, but be yourself. So what we're looking here, the role is to see who you are in a way and communication skills. The video will reassure us a lot also on the English level and the fluidity when people speak. I understand it's stressful, so we always recommend candidates. There's like a practice part in the platform. I always say practice, practice, practice. There are four questions, and you've got 45 seconds to prepare and 60 to respond. I strongly recommend candidates that they use those 45 seconds to work on their structure. What is it that they want to say? And then be yourself. I always tell the story that we had a candidate who was a professional breakdancer, and he just went on the floor and he danced. Amazing.
That's great. Great. That's a great story.
It's a great story. And this is because sometimes, and I understand, like, oh, instead I'm going to try to use fancy words. No, because you're going to lose the point of the video, which is what we want to hear you.
Well, I guess in that case, you really didn't have to hear him. He was breakdancing, but
but he told him to go to do it.
But he said he must have said something, you know, before and after to convince you that he knew the English, and then he showed you who he was.
And that's why we've got four questions, and they are not. And you know, I always say that we read applications to try to look into it and accept you, not to reject you.
Right. Right.
And the French say bienveillance, which is like looking for good things. Looking for the positives.
That's great.
So that's why it's important that you are yourself, because for the writing, you already have your essays.
Right. Understood. Dr. Robert Solomon, as I mentioned, is the inaugural dean of Stern at NYU Abu Dhabi, the newest program among the four. And he answers questions about the program's 12-month structure, NYU AD's admissions process, and why Abu Dhabi and why now. Let's start with an overview of NYU's Abu Dhabi MBA program. Can you please provide us one?
Sure. So we are opening here a full-time MBA program. It's going to be a 12-month accelerated MBA program that will run from January through December. And the first class will start in January of 2025.
Okay, so you're really just getting going. You're not going to have a class this year. You're just getting going for the following year, really.
Right. We'll start a year from January. Although the website is now live, the application is available. It can be downloaded. People can start it. And we are accepting applications now. The first deadline comes up January 15th, but people can start applying now.
Sure, sure. And it takes a while to put together a good application. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Now, is this program aimed for people in the Middle East who want a U.S. MBA, or is it aimed for people anywhere in the world who want to focus on business in the Middle East? What's the goal of the program?
So the program is for anybody in the world. Okay. And what we would like, however, is that people who are interested in the region, people who are interested in the potential of building a career in Abu Dhabi, in the UAE, places like Dubai, or the broader region. So we're happy to consider applications from anybody, anywhere, but we are hopefully going to be preparing people for careers in the region. Now, that said, what people get in the classroom here isn't going to be very different from what they get in the classroom in New York or in MBA programs elsewhere. They're going to be prepared to be business leaders and business managers. So they're going to get the same kinds of core courses that they get in New York. We are bringing the same robust MBA program that we offer in New York here to Abu Dhabi. And we hope that this program will be appealing to people the world over, not just in the region, but also beyond.
Will the professors like be traveling from New York City to Abu Dhabi, or will there be online courses? Part of the robustness of the NYU program is the faculty.
Yeah. And this will be an in-person program. So there is, at the moment, we don't have any plans for online content. And just as we have top-notch faculty, world-class faculty in New York, we will be building a faculty here in Abu Dhabi as well. So we will be hiring to the standards that we have in New York, the kind of faculty that we have in New York. Now, saying that, there is every once in a while, faculty might come over here and there to teach a specific course if they have a specific expertise, and they will offer that course here in Abu Dhabi. In addition to that, we also have a module of the entire program, one module or about 2.5 months of the program will take place in New York City.
Right.
So students will be in New York from, you know, during the summer months, I think it's from sort of the end of May to mid-August, they'll be taking classes in New York, and they will be taught by our faculty, our renowned faculty in New York City.
Great. We'll get to that part of the program in a minute too. Will the program focus at all on the business of energy, since it's going to be located in the Middle East and specifically in the Persian Gulf?
That won't be a specific focus of this program. We will have several specializations in this program. So the specializations we intend to offer at the beginning include finance, leadership and strategy, technology, innovation and entrepreneurship, marketing, and potentially we're also considering sustainability. So if anything, yeah, I mean, there might be sort of a slight energy focus, but on the next wave of energy is sort of how do we transition into the next energy regime away from fossil fuels, away from petroleum-based energy.
Right. Okay, good. Thank you for that answer. It kind of fits with what I understand the Persian Gulf is trying to do. You know, whether
yes.
Saudi Arabia or Abu Dhabi or, you know, any of them in the UAE, they're all trying to prepare for a non-fossil fuel based world.
Yeah, they're preparing for a future without oil, without fossil fuels, and they are diversifying their economy now in order so that once that day arrives, when the last barrel of oil rolls off the assembly line, or however we want to describe that that analogy, that they have other industries that are here and vibrant that can sustain the economy.
Right. Now, I noticed that you mentioned just a minute ago that there's going to be roughly 3 months or 2 modules of the program in New York City. Can I ask why?
Well, we are an NYU program. Mm-hmm. We are NYU Stern as well. And one of the reasons that we want to bring students to New York City is so that they get to know and make connections to the home university. So that's part of it. So they get to know New York, they get to know NYU, they get to know NYU Stern. The other piece of this is that this is a global degree program. This is a program that is preparing students to participate in the global economy. And what better way than to have them learn about the global economy than to be not just in one singular place, but to also have a global experience. And for those in this program, that means not just being in Abu Dhabi, but also going somewhere else. And we just so happen to have a campus in New York with an outstanding faculty, a world-class faculty there. So why not bring the students there? And that's part of, if you look at many of our other programs at NYU Stern, they also have global components. And those global components are meant to prepare people for the realities, the business realities of the world that they live in.
And also, New York City is one of the capitals of business in the world.
Yeah,
it may no longer be the capital, but it is certainly one of the capitals of business. So are there any language requirements for NYU AD? Is Arabic something that's encouraged or required?
No, it's. Look, I think languages are encouraged. All languages are encouraged. I think if you have the opportunity to learn another language, the answer should always be yes. I mean, that's an amazing gift and an amazing thing to be able to speak multiple languages. But there is no requirement at Stern at NYU Abu Dhabi for people to speak anything other than English. And, you know, English spoken widely here in the UAE, just about everybody speaks English. All the signs are in English and the classes will be in English as well.
Okay, great. I noticed that NYU AD, like NYU Stern in New York City, NYU Stern in Abu Dhabi, accepts many tests and also offers a test waiver option. Who should seek a test waiver and who shouldn't seek a test waiver, in your opinion? I mean, you're going to be processing applications very soon.
Whew, yeah. I mean, I personally won't be processing applications. And I know what you meant, but I wanted to preface it this way because I am not, when it comes to sort of admissions, I'm not an expert. I come from the program side. So I've been a scholar, I'm a professor, I'm a researcher, right?
That's my background. Right.
And I've come from running programs. I've been running different kinds of MBA programs for Stern and master's programs and executive programs for Stern for quite a while. So I'm really familiar with the programmatic side. I'm less knowledgeable when it comes to admissions kinds of things. Okay. But let me just try and answer the question as best I can with the caveat that generally, I think the answer I'm going to give you is accurate, but I want to just caveat it with that. I might be making some mistakes on the margins. So when it comes to test waivers, the kinds of folks who should be seeking test waivers, I would say, are those who feel like they are well-equipped in the areas that are associated with an MBA degree. And what areas are those? I would say if you have a STEM degree, if you already have, you know, a degree in engineering where you can demonstrate and you did very, very well in school in your engineering program, and you can demonstrate that you performed very well, especially in your math classes, that would be the kind of individual who might want to request a test waiver. If you went to an undergraduate business program and you've already demonstrated through your completion of that program that you can handle the rigors of an MBA program because you already have the qualifications and you did very, very well in your undergraduate business program, those are the kinds of folks that could potentially be requesting a test waiver or might be granted a test waiver. So basically, if you have sort of a STEMI background and your degree is from a widely respected accredited university and you've performed very, very well in the classroom, especially in your math-based classes, those are the kinds of folks who typically qualify for test waivers.
You did a great job.
Thanks. I might be slightly off a little bit, but that's the general idea.
I think you're right on. I think you're right on. What would you have liked me to ask you?
So I think one of the questions that I was thinking about in preparation for this is why here and why now?
Go for it. It's a great
why
question.
Abu Dhabi and
great
why,
question. Why didn't I ask that one? Why didn't I think of that one?
I think part of it is that if you think about Abu Dhabi, and again, going back to something that I mentioned before, Abu Dhabi is increasingly becoming a world capital that's connected to other world capitals. And it's connected to other world capitals more each and every day. It's becoming more, as you mentioned, it's becoming more of a finance capital. It's becoming more of a sustainability capital. It's becoming more of a business capital. You know, it's becoming more of a consumer products capital. It's becoming a technology capital. It's becoming a fintech capital. All of these things that the UAE and Abu Dhabi in particular is investing in because they see the need to diversify away their economy, away from fossil fuels and towards a more knowledge-based, services-based economy. For us, when we were researching and thinking about this as a location, when you speak to companies and you talk to them, they say, what is it that you need in order to accomplish these goals that you have? We hear the same answers over and over and over again, which is we need people who have managerial skills. You talk to even private or public employers here in the region, they say, there is a need for people with managerial skills to help us with that transition, to be a part of that, to help propel it. Ultimately, these are the folks who are going to become the leaders in this region, and they are going to be a part of that transition away from an energy fossil fuels-based economy towards this new knowledge-based services-based economy. So when we were thinking about it, you know, what better location than to do that right here? We already have a campus here. We've already built a stellar faculty here. We've been operating here for more than a decade. We know the market. And so we feel like now is the right time to be the first ones, the first top US business school to offer a full-time MBA in the region. There's tremendous talent here too. There's a lot of young people who have an incredible desire to upskill too. So that was also part of it. So the employers are asking for it on the demand side for our graduates, and on the supply side, the prospective applicants, the students really want it because they see the need to upskill as well.
Spoken like a true economist. Supply and demand. Following the most recent guest on Mission Straight Talk is HEC's Sarah Vanos, and she shares an overview of the program, an insider perspective of the admissions process, and what she feels are the most common applicant mistakes. Now, I'd like to start with some general questions about HEC Paris and then get more specific and focused on admissions for the full-time MBA program. Can you start by just giving us a very high-level overview of HEC's three MBA programs?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we have our full-time MBA program, which is a 16-month program, which can be residential. So we have on-campus housing, or you can live off-campus. So that's in our Julian-Josas campus, which is quite close to Paris. You can do specialization, you can do electives, plus your core, plus all kinds of other sort of surprises and leadership activities. So that would be our full-time MBA. Then we have our executive MBA that can take anywhere from 15 to 21 months because it's part-time. It's either module or block, so you come on campus every 2 months, or you can do every other weekend in Paris. It's typically for more senior professionals, so the average age is 40, usually some management experience, and then we have anything from directors to CEOs to CFOs in that program, so very senior crowd. And then we have TRIUM, which is one of our flagship partnership programs. So it's in partnership with LSE and also NYU. Even slightly more senior profiles that join that program. And it's really exciting because it takes place in modules all over the world.
Sounds good. And how long is that program?
So usually that one is about just almost 20 months.
Okay, wonderful. Now let's zoom in on the full-time MBA programs, more notable and distinctive elements. Can you describe them? You've hinted at them a little bit. By the way, I once visited HEC Paris.
Yep.
It is gorgeous. Absolutely
yes,
beautiful.
I agree.
I don't think you'll disagree with me, but just from an outsider's perspective, and the proximity to Paris isn't bad either.
Yeah, so I commute from Paris every day to go on campus, so it's actually really easy to reach. And like you said, it's beautiful. So it's a wooded, private acres of a forest, tennis courts, a chateau of its own, and of course our other programs, but the one that we'll zoom in on now is the MBA. So beautiful campus with the possibility to live on campus, which is kind of interesting and different because a lot of MBA programs, you're kind of spread out everywhere. So we feel that having this on-campus housing really builds the community from day one, because you're with about 80% of the students living in our residential housing. You can easily attend club activities, different community events. So you really foster that connection from day one. If we start with kind of the curriculum or notable things there, I think the 16 months is really unique. So typically you're looking at an MBA, where do I do it? How long? My ROI, et cetera. So we've kind of found the sweet spot. So you can either do 12 or 16 months, depending on your intake. So it can be a little shorter than the longer programs, but you get all the benefits of the longer programs. So electives, specialization, participation in our MBA Olympics, New Horizons, which is broadening your horizons and figuring out kind of how to anticipate trends. So that's unique. We have a pretty smaller than I would say some of the larger class sizes. So usually an average of about 300 students coming in two intakes. And you can start in September or January. So that's also unique. I think if we say maybe one takeaway from these things I've kind of thrown out there would be flexibility and customization. So I know that's what a lot of people look for in their program. So whether it's program length, how to sort of specialize what you take. So we have the specializations, which electives, where you live, if you live on campus, all of that really offers the flexibility to have a great experience.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. What do you look for besides stats? Now, you've mentioned a little bit. Maybe you can just give a little more on that.
Yeah, so typically we will assess everyone. So we'll start by looking at their CV. So that's one of the criteria. We'll look at the GMAT GRE test. These are things that kind of all follow and complement each other. We look at previous academic backgrounds. So which school did you go to? What did you study? And again, we try to tie all of this back to the motivation. So there's a motivational paragraph where you get to explain what's next, why an MBA. So we're kind of trying to look holistically. As discussed, we look at extracurriculars. We also look at languages. So we think it can be interesting, even if you've just started to learn a language, if your goal is to work in France, it can be helpful if you've already started learning. It's not necessarily, but we do look at that in terms of, again, motivation, career desires, and outcomes. We look at the essays. So we read all of the essays and then discuss them. So sometimes things can jump out. Some of them are kind of creative. So I would say in there, depending on the essay topic, we're looking for different things. The additional essay is something that not maybe only 10 to 20% of students use, but it's extremely interesting because it's where you can add anything that we might not have known about you. And it's often where we learn something extremely interesting. So I would say that's something to look at. Where we also evaluate, but it's at a later state, would be the interviews. So how did it go with your alumni interviewer? How did the alumni interviewer rate your presentation? Because you have to make a presentation, the communication skills, the motivation, et cetera. I think those are all of the main buckets if I'm thinking through them. There's none that's weighted super heavily. They're all kind of pairing together and matching together. And even if someone didn't have the perfect application, because we discuss each and every profile in a jury of several members, there are other things that can come into play. So for example, our marketing or recruitment managers try to have a call or meet everyone that comes in the program. So it can be very interesting because often they'll add complimentary information that can boost almost if somebody forgot something and the marketing recruitment manager knows, they can also, you know, talk about their conversation, talk about things like that. So I think that's also somewhere that can kind of add value.
What's the most common mistake that you see applicants making in the application process?
Yeah, it's a funny one. Usually we kind of let it go because it's so common, but a lot of people will cut and paste essays and keep the other schools that they're applying to. It's okay because we know that they're applying to multiple schools, but sometimes people will say, I'm applying to HEC only, and then they will cut and paste an essay and a CV where they cite another school. It's the most common one, I think. For the admissions team, we are rather used to it. We know that it can happen. We know, okay, it's an oversight. Maybe the person is not super detail oriented. But where it can have a larger impact is our alumni will have access to the application of the person who's applied and moved into an interview round. So for, I would say, our alumni, it's a more big mistake because they want people who are like diehard HEC. They want them to love HEC, to only be thinking about HEC. So common, easy though, I think, for applicants to take a quick double check, you know, put a PDF of your application file, look the whole thing through, and just look for these very small but easy to fix things, I would say.
Yeah, this is one of the things that comes up repeatedly from admissions directors. My suggestion for applicants is if you are adapting essays from another school, don't cut and paste, number one. But if you are adapting essays from another school, when you start that process, not at the end, when you start, do a find and replace. Okay. That way you will not miss it. Just do it at the beginning. Okay. Do it then. And it's taken care of. You won't be making the mistake that Sarah just mentioned. Did you detect some common themes here? What are the differences with US programs, like language requirements for some? Now it's your chance, your opportunity to apply to programs that fit your goals, your needs, your finances, and your wants, and that is likely to want you. If you'd like help in presenting the best of the authentic you to any of these or other top MBA programs in the United States or in Europe, or the EU, I should say, please contact Accepted for guidance in presenting your best self and polishing that gem of an application. Go to accepted.com/MBA/services to discover how Accepted's experts can help you and support you. And by all means, take advantage of our free initial consultation. Thank you, listeners, for joining me today. Quick reminder, for 100% free resource, take Accepted's MBA admissions quiz, get your quick reality check and tips for improvement. Just go to accepted.com/MBA quiz. and do so ASAP. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.